Are you a fan of the small ball?
I'm not as dramatic now as James.
Dramatic? You sound like my wife now.
Jealous of all the inside analysis and crack on the football pod? Well, we've got you covered with the Hurling Pod. Subscribe to the Hurling Pod feed on the OTB Sports app now.
I don't know who's running that dressing room. We look at Maguire. Maguire's had a torrid time. And again today. Crazy booking, then you're thinking he might get sent off. Even the deflection, you're thinking, just even yourself come out next to two or three yards. You drag the players up with you. Is he having battles with Ronaldo? Captaincy, all these issues. Egos come into it. You leave your ego at the front door. You leave that there. We all have a bit of ego to wake up, get out of your house in the morning. But these guys are just, it's all about how am I looking? Am I looking the part? Oh, you know, are my boots nice? How's my hair looking? Play the game. You had Man United. We're looking at the United fans behind the goal. You're looking, you're thinking, and they know, they're not daft. They're looking at this team we're supporting and we're fighting every week for. I've given up. They gave up. No excuses. But we'll hear a lot of rubbish over the next few days. Some players, we've heard it. There'll be statements, or guaranteed, the next few days. Sorry about that, we'll try better next week. I can tell you which lads will be making the statements through their teams and Twitter and all that rubbish. No. It's what you do on the pitch really interests me. Not all the other garbage.
Yeah, there were Roy Keane's thoughts at full time. Very happy to bring in Danny Mills to the show. Hey, Danny.
Hi, you okay?
Yeah, very well. Look, you'd have a feel for this. I'm sure you've been involved in matches where you're getting destroyed and in the final 10, 15 minutes you're a broken team and it can look like you have given up, whereas I suspect there are technical and tactical reasons as to why just the backside has fallen out of things. The way Keane presents the Manchester United problem is that it is a problem of character, that there's a toxic dressing room, disputes over the captaincy, lack of focus on the important things, as opposed to, well, I suppose, quality tactics, any of the more technical aspects you might care to mention. To what extent do you think Keane is accurate in his assessment of Manchester United, that the big flaw with this club is one of character?
I think he's 100% right. Simple as that. You know, that's not just going off the back of what Roy Keane says. Think of what happened under Louis van Gaal. You know, at times where, you know, he questioned the likes of Luke Shaw. He questioned his attitude. He questioned his fitness. And he wasn't the only player within that. Mourinho then comes in. One of the greatest managers we've ever seen across Europe. Has won absolutely everything on more than one occasion. Again, starts questioning players' fitness, questioning their commitment. Questions Pogba, falls out with players and this type of thing. And then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comes in. And okay, some of the results are okay, but it's because you've got good players and you get away with it from time to time. And then you bring in Ralf Rangnick, you know, who clearly wants to play a high pressing team, and clearly the players are not buying into it and they're not doing it. And I think it was summed up in the latter stages of the game. Manchester, I can't remember, it's 3-1 or 4-1. Manchester City gave the ball away down their right-hand side. And I think it was Luke Shaw started to break away. There were six or seven Manchester City players that swarmed around him. You know, chasing back. It was like charge of the Light Brigade. You know, trying to get back and stop Luke Shaw. 100% effort until the dying moments, because they know that they are droppable. They know that Pep Guardiola will leave them out. You know, they know the situation. Manchester United players had it too easy for too long. And as Roy says, too many big egos, not putting the effort in. The biggest difference between Manchester City and Manchester United was work rate. I've not seen the stats, but I watched the game. I did the game live for foreign television. The biggest difference was work rate. If you don't work as hard as the opposition, you've got no chance. And then if they're better than you, technically, you're going to get pulverised, which is exactly what happened. And those Manchester United players need to have a serious look at themselves. I was listening to the radio coming back last night here in the UK. Manchester United fans were devastated. And they were saying these players are not working hard enough, don't feel like they're putting the effort in. So this is not just Roy Keane. This is not just media pundits. This is everybody looking at it and saying, hang on a minute, we're not getting our money's worth here.
Mm. You've seen lots of players through your time in the game and you've been in lots of dressing rooms. To make it as a professional footballer is outrageously difficult. And generally, as a personality, you're not in the habit of giving up or not trying very hard or not making colossal efforts day in, day out. And I would think that's especially true if you make it at Manchester United. So what do you think happens to players who, presumably through their teenage years, have worked outrageously hard to then get to a point where you're saying, well, their character has gone out the window as more established players. How does that happen? Why does that happen in your experience?
I think their focus changes. Off the field issues can change it. Money can affect it. Big contracts, hunger, desire, all these types of things can be thrown into it. You know, look at Manchester City. So go back to Manchester United under Sir Alex Ferguson. To win, was it 13 Premier League titles? To win one is hard enough. To win two is even harder. To win four, five, six, seven, up to 13 takes so much desire to go out every single day and work your socks off. And this is why only the very, very best and the greatest are able to achieve that. And if you look at an Olympic cycle and you look at athletics, it's very, very difficult to win back-to-back Olympic titles, however good you are, simply because you have to peak for about 5-6 years, you know, within that. You have to be at your very, very best every single day for 6 years to win back-to-back Olympic titles. And that's similarly to what Manchester City are doing. You know, and that desire, that hunger is incredibly difficult to do. When Leicester won the title, they dropped off massively the year after because they'd reached their pinnacle, you know, and then they started to fade away a little bit. I think Manchester United players think, oh, you know, we've achieved something. We've got there. We're playing for Manchester United. And they've not continued to improve. Has Rashford continued to improve? No. Has Pogba ever really improved since he came into Manchester United? Bruno Fernandes now, has he improved from his first season? No. Harry Maguire, most of these players are going backwards. And yes, okay, that can be down to confidence, but the only way to get over that is to work harder. First and foremost, you have to outwork your opposition. Simple as that.
Yeah.
If you outwork them, you've got half a chance.
No, I do accept that. And yet, I look at some of the personalities, like Maguire, for instance. He seems like a very diligent, hardworking type. He just gives off that impression. And so it makes you wonder if this is a more complicated picture then. Oh, they're just not working hard enough. They just don't care.
When you're having a bad time of it, you have to work harder. That's all you can do. You know, you have to work smart and you have to work harder. Look at the first goal. Three players allowed Bernardo Silva down the left-hand side to get the cross in. The save comes off David De Gea. And Harry Maguire steps over the ball. Just kick the ball out. So what happens is once you start to get in this rut, you start to make bad decisions. Mm. You know, so, you know, they're not working hard enough. They're making poor decisions. And of course, and I've said all along, Manchester United have some very good players. And if all those players come together for one game and play well, they can beat anybody on their day. But they don't have the consistency. They don't have the platform to do that. And this is the problem. You know, forget about Manchester United DNA. Manchester United DNA is about winning. But they don't have a plan. Ralf Jannik is trying to put a plan in place to give them a bit of stability. And they did okay in the first half. So why change it? What in the second half? What changed about Manchester United in that second half? They dropped off. They didn't work as hard. I'd love to see the running stats, you know, from that game. I bet Manchester City worked harder. And they had the ball, which is very, very unusual for a team that has the ball to work harder than a team without the ball. I said when Sir Alex Ferguson left that Manchester United won't win the title for another 10 years. I got slaughtered by Manchester United fans. I think that's next year, isn't it? So if they don't win it next year, I was right. And they've never really replaced. And it's not just, it's the coaching staff. You know, what are the coaches doing? I look at the bench and the coaches on the bench under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, under Ralf Rangnick. Are they driving the players day in, day out, like Pep Guardiola does? Are they listening to the manager? Doesn't appear that they are at the moment. Mm.
And that's what you feel the big difference in the second half was, just work rate dropped off. You didn't see anything that City did all that differently or Manchester United did all that differently besides work rate.
I texted my son halfway through, well, just not long into the second half, and just said, look at how Manchester City move when they're trying to get on the ball. The movement of Grealish, of Foden, of Mahrez, of De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, the front players especially. When they come off a player, they sprint. They don't walk into space. You know, when they're trying to receive the ball, they sprint 5-10 yards, they get into that pocket, they get into that space, and then they're free. Manchester United players were ambling around. So sometimes, you know, it doesn't have to be, you're not talking about running up and down the pitch. It's those five-yard moves. They have to be short. They have to be sharp. And Manchester United weren't doing that. And that the only reason for that can come down to attitude. Mm. Manchester United have some very, very talented players and players with an awful lot of ability. Anyone can work hard. Anyone can run. I made a living out of it. I made a career out of working hard and kicking people and being difficult to beat. I had limited ability. But I worked hard, and I worked harder than other players because I had to make up for those deficiencies. Manchester United are going out at the moment, and it seems like they just think they've got a divine right to play football and win football matches, and football doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Or else it's a fairly demoralised dressing room who don't believe in what their manager is telling them, which is a possibility here. I mean, what would you think if you were playing in a team and the plan was to go out in a four? It looked 4-2-2-2-ish again. McTominay, Fred, Alanga, Sancho and Bruno Fernandes, Pogba as your front two. I mean, you would be thinking, this is odd. This is a really weird approach.
Yeah, but it didn't... Pretty much same group of players didn't want to do it under Mourinho. Didn't do it enough under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Now not doing it under Ralf Rangnick. Mm. Same group of players. It can't be every single manager. And even Van Gaal before that. You're talking world-class managers, you know, within that, and great coaches. Can't be... Four managers can't be wrong. And formations are there as a starting point. Simple. What formation did Man City play yesterday? Apart from four at the back.
Yeah, it's pretty fluid.
And Rodri holding, yeah. I'm not sure.
On your point, though, so the football under Van Gaal, I mean, they did what he asked them to do, I suppose. It was fairly dull stuff. I mean, it was pass into complete boredom. I'd have to say Mourinho, you know, so we're saying the Manchester United players are the common denominator here. Mourinho hasn't found a dressing room which was good since about 2011. You know, the Spurs dressing room was awful. The Roma dressing room was awful. He was fairly toxic himself. And he was effectively bullying. He was effectively bullying Luke Shaw. You know, he turned to the crowd and Rashford missed a chance. How can I work with this? Everything he said was just negative. And yeah, he got some results, admittedly. But second in the league is okay. And he wins the Europa League. But there's something about Mourinho that's toxic. And then I don't think we can put Solskjaer into the top bracket of managers. So I would still question whether, like, a really top manager has had a hold of this group since Ferguson left. Really. Like, Mourinho was past his best. Solskjaer's not on that level. Van Gaal had question marks over. Moyes wasn't really given a chance. So, as much as we're down in this dressing room, I'd feel a lot more confident saying that if a peak Conte or a peak Pep or a peak Klopp had gone in there, because they would do a hell of a lot more with these players. Well, I think the players are being thrown at the bus as well.
And then you're looking at the quality of the players. Are they good enough? You know, David De Gea has come good again this season. Luke Shaw has a couple of good games, a couple of off games.
Yeah.
Has never really shown the consistency. Had 6 months lead into the Euros. People are talking about the best left back in the world. Not a chance. Look at how Ashley Cole used to play. The consistency that he hit. Lindelof. I'm sorry, but you're not going to win the league, you know, with Lindelof, you know, in there. Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I mean, I don't want to damage the kid, but he's not great going forward. He made poor defensive decisions. He looks way out of his depth at Manchester United. When you look at the fullbacks that Manchester United have had in the past, you know, Evra, Neville, Dennis Irwin, he's nowhere near it. Mm. And then you look at Fred and McTominay. How many United players at the moment would be taken by the rest of the top six? I don't think there's too many there.
And I'd sort of think that's the issue, as opposed to these guys aren't trying or are bad professionals. I think there's a quality issue there, primarily.
Yeah, well, and then you know, Bruno Fernandes on his day, yes. Rashford has never really shown the consistency levels that he needs to be at. Sancho has only just come in and getting his opportunity. You know, Bruno Fernandes and Ronaldo, yes, but Ronaldo's not going to press. He's not going to chase people down and do what he has to do. Cavani is injured a lot, an awful lot at the moment. So I think it is, you have to look at recruitment of coaches, recruitment of players. It hasn't been good enough at Manchester United, you know, so there's that. And then if the players don't believe in the manager's philosophy, you know, if Conte came into that team now, what has Conte done at every single club? Get the players fitter, make them work harder. I don't think those Manchester United players want to do that at the moment because they haven't done it for the last two or three managers. So why would they do it suddenly just because Conte comes in? Mm. I think they need an overhaul in the summer.
They've spent a billion. So like they've spent a billion and the net result is they're nowhere.
But the money's irrelevant.
Yeah.
They've spent poorly.
They really have. If they're starting over, do you think the Ronaldo introduction has been good for the group or no?
No, I don't. Ronaldo is the greatest goal scorer, I think, of my time that I ever seen in terms of big cup. I would still argue that Messi is a better footballer and a better player, but Ronaldo is the greatest goal scorer. You know, for big moments, all those types of things. But it's interesting. I did a game commentating on a game early in the season against Young Boys. Obviously on the AstroTurf pitch, which was terrific. You know, the pitch was awful. It didn't help anybody. Man sent off, and you've got Ronaldo up front on his own. 36, 37. He's not going to run into the channels. He's not going to chase the fullback. He's not going to put the centre halves under pressure. And actually, I don't want Ronaldo to do that if he's my centre forward. I'm like, you know, stay in the box, get balls into the box and let him shoot and let him score. Because he's Ronaldo, you keep playing him, and you feel Ole Gunnar Solskjaer felt you have to play him because it's Cristiano Ronaldo. He has to. So then that detracts from the rest of the team.
And if the team want to press,
of course, it is. If they want to press, and he's not doing it.
Yeah.
You start going, hang on a minute. If he's not going to do it, what's the point in me doing it? Because I'm going to get caught out.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, that can filter through the team very, very quickly.
Yes. The players sense this is wrong. Tactically, this is wrong. And yet politically, he's staying on because Solskjaer's afraid to bring him off. And so players know something's really wrong here if this isn't a meritocracy anymore.
Of course. And players are, you know, people always go, footballers aren't the brightest. When it comes to football intelligent and working things out in terms of football, footballers are some of the quickest people on the planet. They see when it's not right. They see when it's unfair. They see when somebody's getting treated differently and they don't agree with it. And I think that's been the case. The introduction of... Did Ronaldo really ever have any intentions, or did Man City have ever intentions of taking Ronaldo to Manchester City? I don't think they did.
Mm.
Because there's... Pep questioned whether Sergio Aguero was good enough for Manchester City. One of the greatest goal scorers we've ever seen in the Premier League questioned him and said, look, he doesn't play in the way that I want him to play. And of course, at the time, I think he was, mid-20s and scoring loads of goals. And he adapted. You're not going to get a 36, 37-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo to adapt and suddenly start pressing high up the pitch and playing like, you know, putting the effort in that Phil Foden or Bernardo Silva or Raheem Sterling or, you know, Kevin De Bruyne puts in. And I think that's the problem. You've got Ronaldo, who's this huge personality, genius footballer, a leader, icon. Everybody's looking up to him in awe of him, but he's not doing what you want the team to do. Mm. So everyone else goes, well, if he's not going to do it, why do I have to do it? And I think that's where I think that a lot of the problem lies. If I was Manchester United, I think with a new manager coming in the summer, one of the best things they could do is move Cristiano Ronaldo on. Not because he's a bad player, not because he's a bad influence, just because a new manager needs a fresh start. And with Cristiano Ronaldo around, you don't have that opportunity.
It's a really interesting situation. Danny Mills, great to have you on. Thanks for all that. That was great. Thanks so much.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Danny Mills with us there. And our football coverage is brought to you by Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season. Pat Nevin's going to join us after 9. We will talk about Man City as well a bit, and Chelsea at the weekend and a couple of other stories. But Manchester United, by the nature of that defeat, definitely feel like the story once again. So Pat Nevin's on the way after 9. We'll have rugby after 8.
Football on off the ball.
With Sky. Get more of the sports you love on Sports Extra with BT Sport and Premier Sports.
Ooh, lots to discuss on the football show this evening. Second half just underway between Spurs and Everton. Not a good evening for Everton thus far. They are 3-0 down. It could be more. Michael Keane on goal on 14 minutes. We had Son scoring on 17. We had Matt Doherty with the beautiful through ball for Harry Kane to make it 3-0 on 37 minutes. And as I speak, 45 minutes and 42 seconds on the clock. Second half has just started. Spurs have gone 4-0 up against Everton. It's getting ugly. It is getting very, very ugly for Everton. What's this going to be? 45 minutes, 4-0? Frank Lampard staring at the replay. I don't think there'll be much solace there. This really is an extraordinary situation. We'll get a look at the goal again in a moment. There's shaking of heads in the Everton defence and screaming. It's a move. Well, it's not even a move. It's Everton dispossessed in their own half. Spurs pressing and cutting through Everton, and it's all hands on deck. Ball is played out to the right-hand side and then squared back across the area, and it's a tap-in. Reguilon with the goal, up from left back. If it wasn't him, it would have been Harry Kane. It's disastrous. Son with the pass out to the right-hand side, and then it was squared back across the area, and Reguilon scored. So 4-0 Spurs against Everton. 46 minutes on the clock. Pat and Evan, dear oh dear.
I'm just suffering watching that right as we speak just now. Everton are a wee bit lucky. It's only four. In the first half, two other goals. Certainly, Son had a great opportunity to slip a pass in, and it was another opportunity missed as well. And it is a classic case of every time they attack, look like they're going to score. If Everton, if Frank Lampard's already taken Keane off and put Branthwaite on, it's a mess. He had to change it completely. Looking through that Everton team, it is an utter shambles at the moment. There's no demarking in front of the back four, who are enjoying watching Spurs playing because they're not doing any tackling or any chasing. The amount of times that Kane and Son get the ball in that kind of 10 position, no one near them, no one getting close to them. It's supposed to be Allen in there. All you ever see is him running back. And Van de Beek, honestly, I have no clue why you're playing him there. I have no clue at all. You got to get Doucouré back there, get it really tight. I could go on and on and on. I was at Goodison Park last week there on Thursday for the game against Boreham Wood, 0-0 at half time, and you think, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. Frank made the right changes at half time. I have no idea what he does in the second half to change that. And apart from moving one centre back off, it's a mess, and you're right to ask it. What I've watched here, four, this could be anything if Spurs keep on going for it. Honestly, it could be anything.
And they look in the mood, Spurs. They don't look like they're letting up, to be honest.
Well, you know, if you've got Harry Kane, he's got goal records. He's just two behind Frank Lampard now in the Premier League statistics. He's level with Thierry Henry, as I understand it, as well, as after scoring today. So he's not going to be sitting back thinking. If you're a centre-forward like Son and Kane, you're just thinking to yourself, yeah, I want to go and increase my goals tally. It's like party time here, fill your boots. But just little things watching that game, like watching Doucouré, who is perfectly capable of being a very good player. He's having one of those Paul Pogba, I don't fancy it days. And it's ridiculous. He's not put a tackle in. Bentancur is absolutely bossing him. It's actually quite painful. It's really painful to watch. And, you know, we had conversations, and a lot of Everton fans were having a right dig at me about, you know, they weren't impressed with Rafa at all. And I was thinking, well, I'm not convinced it's Rafa. You know, the players that Rafa had, the limitations of the quality of players that he had and didn't have time to change them. Frank comes in, you're thinking, yeah, lift them a wee bit, but still the same blokes, still the same guys. And Frank's actually got Dominic Calvert-Lewin back and Richarlison on the pitch at the same time here. But it's looked awful tonight. I mean, in that first half against Boreham, was better than the second half. First half against Boreham was a mess. And that looks like a team that is absolutely... And no Everton fan will disagree with this. They are well capable of going down. If you play like that, you will go down. But fortunately for Everton, their home games are a wee bit better than their away games.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, because I was about to make the point in advance of this evening that if you look at the bottom, Newcastle and Eddie Howe have rocketed away from trouble very quickly. They're up to 14th and they have games in hand. We can risk writing off Norwich and Watford, and then it feels like a fight between Burnley, Leeds and I suppose Brentford. And I had discounted Everton a touch. On the basis of a few things, Lampard came in, seemed to make a bit of an impression. They beat Leeds very well. It was a spirited performance against Manchester City and you thought, well, they'll be okay. Fact remains, they have lost four of their last five and they have Wolves next at home and then they have Newcastle at home. Newcastle won't be easy. Wolves is about the most winnable game. But you look at Everton's April and they have West Ham away. They have Manchester United, who you would presume can't be as terrible, but then again, we'll come to that. Manchester United, they have Liverpool, they have Chelsea. That's their April. West Ham away, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea. It's very conceivable Everton could get 0 points across April and be in a real dogfight. And on the basis of this evening, it could be sticky indeed. Could I ask you about Seamus Coleman? I didn't really get to see all of this because I've been on air, but I did get to see the halftime analysis and they were showing the Michael Keane own goal and the ball was played down the left channel, Spurs' left channel, Seamus Coleman's channel. And Jamie Carragher, in a pretty respectful way, was saying, look, Coleman's been a great right back, a really great right back, but this is happening all the time to him now. Players running in off behind him. And actually, the issue there is Everton's recruitment and also his centre-half's not protecting him. Is Coleman and his tenure in, really emergency stage and it's just not cutting it anymore? Or is there more to it than that?
Well, you asked me about Patterson in comparison to him and Coleman. And I told you right away, Coleman's days are numbered there. Yeah. He's had his time. But I said, his days are numbered. Patterson's top quality, he's going to come on, he's going to be absolutely fine. Patterson actually started the game against Bournemouth. He gets substituted at half time and brought on, Coleman was brought on. The Everton fans applauded every single thing Patterson did, every single thing, because they could spot right away his class. And Frank took him off, but he didn't take him off because he was playing badly. He had to go from a 5 to a 4 and he wanted to set fullbacks that he knew would just be fullbacks, and he gets an extra forward on then. That's what happened the weekend. That's why Coleman come on for Patterson. Not the weekend, Thursday night. But watching Seamus there, it's not the same Seamus Coleman. And that's paying a compliment to say how brilliant he was. And, flying forward. But if you compare, it's not that he's incapable of going forward. But if you go forward, he won't get back in time now. And it just looks like there's a number of teams trying to play in him defensively, if they possibly can. But it's not just Seamus. It's not, absolutely not. I mean, he's not the worst player on that defensive line today, not by a long chalk. He's still doing all the right things when he should be doing them. But in terms of, the pace you need to keep on going at this level all the time, it's getting really, really hard for Seamus. So a bit like Jamie, you hate writing off something that you like so much that has been so brilliant, particularly, he's phenomenal for Everton. He's the perfect class act for Everton all the time as well. But you look at it, that's one of the areas that they'll have to, he won't play every, he can't play every game. And at the moment it's looking, it's looking at the days are numbered.
Yeah. On a brighter note, Matt Doherty seems to have had a very good evening. Looks really fit again, he got lots of minutes. And he's had that assist for Harry Kane as Spurs almost score again. And it's last-ditch stuff and it's out for a corner. But there's another goal coming here, I think. So 4-0 still, 54 minutes on the clock. With Matt Doherty, Jose Mourinho signs him, doesn't work out at all. He struggles to adapt to a back four. And then lo and behold, Nuno arrives, where he played his best football under Nuno at Wolves. And you think, well, okay, finally, the ball will start rolling here. Nuno gets the chop and also passes on Doherty. Doesn't like what he's seen from Doherty. And that's where I thought, well, this is big trouble here. And then sometimes you need a bit of luck. And so who arrives in as Spurs hit the crossbar, by the way, with a header? Another goal coming. Eric Dier at the header there. Who arrives in but Conte, who likes wing-backs? And you think, OK, Matt Doherty, it's now or never. Well, we may be getting now.
Looks like it. There was one moment in the first half where he attacked, at the back post. And he probably should have cut it back, but he smashed it and the keeper, Pickford, made a decent save. But that's him, isn't it? When he's got that power and that physique to go forward the way he does there. And you can see the confidence is in his game. There's no doubt about that. And
sorry to interrupt you. I'll just say, the Wi-Fi is a little bit off, actually. As you were speaking there, Matt Doherty picked the ball inside right channel, played an absolutely delicious diagonal ball over the top to Harry Kane, and Harry Kane volleys it in with his left foot to make it 5-0. So Doherty involved again with an assist for Harry Kane. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm about 45 seconds behind you. I'm watching it here. So you're giving me the bad news before I actually get it. But yeah, you can see that confidence is coming back. But if you look at physically, in the pure physique in terms of, well, say Sheamus against him, and you can tell the difference. You can see and you can feel the difference. But it's what I'm saying about teams. You don't become a bad player, a good player. Sometimes you just get in a system with a manager and someone playing beside you that suits you. You know, and it's, people wonder, oh, why didn't you do that last week? Well, the manager was telling me to do something totally different. I had a different manager with different ideas last week. You get a new guy in, adapts and change. And then you add the top of that, which is, by the way, I'm just seeing the King go, he's quite good, that guy, Harry Kane, isn't he?
It's outrageous. It's an outrageous finish. Oh, my God.
Is he swinger? That's if he's got a swinger.
Yeah.
You know, he's right. I don't actually know if he's right-footed or left-footed. It kind of doesn't seem to matter. It's torture for me. I want everyone to do well. I've got a lot of time for Frank as well. But when you see something as good as that, you know, and the way he technically takes the ball, and how the vast majority of players in that position, you know, they're at an angle, it's going to lash somewhere, they're going to hit and hope, and you never know, it might just smash into the top corner, right? See, with Harry Kane, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's running away from the ball, running away from the goal. The angle's ridiculous. The goalkeeper's got it covered. But he knows the one tiny area that he can smack it on the ball, like with his left foot, the back post. He hits the inside of the post. I mean, he is absolutely stunning. And considering all those millions of years ago when we thought he was going to go to Manchester City, and he looks like Harry Kane again, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he's been fast. Actually, this whole game, he's been fantastic at every single part of his game. And that is pure torture. And looking at Everton just now, I mean, I can remember, and I'll own up to it right away, and it's painful to talk about. I remember getting beat 6-2 by Aston Villa, well, playing for Everton at Aston Villa. And that was just not totally unthinkable for Everton and Evertonians. I mean, we hit the post about four times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but 6-2. I couldn't imagine that would happen to Everton again. You're looking at just now and you think, if they get away with 6-8, they've won a watch.
Yeah.
They're that far away and the quality is that bad. Now, Godfrey's missing. Yeremina's missing. You can make all those excuses as well. But you have to have depth of squad. And that's been the problem for Everton for, you know, for a decently long time now. Mm. It's pre-Rafa. It's pre-Frank. The strength and depth in the squad is nowhere near good enough for this level. And they're paying the price now.
Pat, all that said, I'm really not sure on Frank Lampard. There's been nothing really to suggest this guy's a top-level manager. Like, he did a fine job at Derby. He introduced young players at Chelsea. But I would say Thomas Tuchel has cast a different light on the job he did at Chelsea. And this is really terrible. I mean, and you mentioned a couple of players playing in odd positions that catch your eye. If this kind of a night happens a year into Lampard's tenure or 18 months, he's potentially walking the plank. This is really worrying.
No, I think you're right. The questions will be asked after this. I think they will, even just after this, because they're facing relegation. They've been, the way they set up tonight, Everton, it was a 4-1-4-1. But, you know, with Allen as the deep line midfielder and them getting destroyed in that area, Doucouré, who, you know, if he's got something, he's got energy. But his energy should be from, you know, coming from deep, from really deep. He's spending the time around the 10 area. You know, and Van de Beek just doesn't look as if he can make a tackle there. So he's put a team there. And I'm looking before half-time thinking, Frank, change that to a 4-2-3-1 now. Just change it now. You need to give protection to that back line. Now, he'll see his back line should be better than the full-backs and two centre-backs. Well, they ain't at the moment, so give them protection. Get two guys standing in front of them and get two guys who actually want to go and do a little bit of defending. It's taken a long time now for the changes to be made. I mean, I'm mentioning Van de Beek, honestly. He's actually looked like a ghost out there. The play just goes through him. There's nothing, absolutely play just goes by him all the time. He's off now, isn't he? I think.
Yeah, just off.
Polenko's come on there. And, you know, to see that after like 10 minutes and think, right, shambles, change it now. But only changing it after 55, 60 minutes. Now, he's now got a lot of options, Frank. Again, it's going back to the, is it his fault? Is it Rafa's fault? Or is it, you've left them with, you know, just a stinker of a squad that's got no balance to it. And any two players missing, and it doesn't matter who they are. It almost, if it's Mina at the back of Godfrey, who's the best defender, or if it's Richarlison, or if it's Dominic Calvert-Lewin, they're stuffed. Absolutely stuffed. There's nowhere near the backup, and it's plugging the holes, and there's not enough fingers on the holes. So Frank, by the end of the season, if they go down, they absolutely will ask those questions. Is Frank good enough manager? And we did talk about this, and when Frank was made manager, and you have noted that I like him.
Yeah,
I like positivity. He will be much more positive than say Rafa Benitez, and the fans hated Rafa Benitez for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons they couldn't stand Rafa Benitez is because he was safe. He was ultra safe. They found him unbelievably boring. And that's fine as long as you're getting wins, but he wasn't getting enough wins. But when you look at a team like Everton, when they play a wee bit more open and they're getting absolutely battered out of sight, you think, I think I can see what Rafa was doing. I think I know why he was playing that group that way, because he knew the limitations.
Yeah, very interesting. The cameras just cut to Conte. Just one last question on this game. I hadn't intended to spend so much time on it, by the way. But I saw Jamie Carragher on Monday Night Football threw up just an unbelievably interesting statistic, and I just wanted to get your take on it. I'd be inclined to say this is coincidence, but it's a big enough sample size to suggest there is something to it. So, and I, by the way, I don't know how he got this stat or what, like where he plucked this from. So whoever kind of looked into this and found the pattern, they deserve a big thumbs up. Spurs and Antonio Conte. When Conte and Spurs have had 5 days or more training before a game, in their seven matches where that this has happened, and we're talking Man City, we're talking Liverpool, we're talking Leicester, we're talking Leeds, we're in good teams. He's had six wins and a draw. The draw with Liverpool and six wins when they've had 5 days or more training under Conte. Same sample size, seven games under Conte where they've had 4 days or fewer. Seven games, one win. That's an unbelievable statistic.
It's surprising but not shocking when I watch them play, and particularly the way I watch them play tonight. If you look at when Everton are trying to play out the back, and they're just closed down really, really quickly. Any part of the game you watch, your energy levels at Spurs closing down, no one's getting any room in midfield, you know, Højbjerg, they'll get close, Bentancur, they'll get close, zip, 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 zip. Really, really hard to do. It's really, really hard to do for 90 minutes. It's really hard to do against good players. You need to have all the energy you've got. You take away a couple of days worth of rest, and that just gets much, much harder. And it's very noticeable, I suppose. They do look languid some of the times when they play those games when too much is asked in a short period of time. Now, some people will say it's maybe the fact that he's got more time to work on them and shape and structure, but he's got the shape and structure. He knows what it is. He's put them in that shape. It's not complicated for his history. He knows what he wants, and they'll know what they want from him as well. It's been a really settled team, whether they've had the 3 days or the 5-6 days, whatever sort of break. And I do think it is the style they play, which is, you know, de rigueur just now, high tempo, high pressing. Certain teams can, and certain teams can't do it. Spurs could never do it, never do it, until he comes along. But I still don't think they can do it every 3 days. But they can do it with a break. And it's, we've talked about it with Manchester United. They cannot do it. They just cannot do it. It's, they can do it for 15, 20 minutes or 25 or a real push. I watched them once this season and they did 45, I think it was against Aston Villa. And then after that, they just, gasket goes. Whereas with Spurs, he's done whatever he's done to get them that fit to be able to cope with doing that. I always think about when I'm watching a game of football, I think, would I like playing against that? And I watch Everton and I think, I'd love to play against that. And I watch Spurs and I think, that'd be hard. I wouldn't be getting a lot of time there, whatever I was in the field. And I think 90% of it, not all of it, but 90% of it, is being able to build up those energy levels, rest, and then be able to go to that level again.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Amazing the difference a day or two rest can make at this kind of level. So we're 5-0. Harry Kane has scored twice, which means he has just moved past Henry's Premier League record of 175 goals. Kane is now on 176, sitting on 177.
Guess who's next?
Yeah, exactly. Frank Lampard.
You know it's Frank, don't we?
Looking on. So there's just something in the air this evening. We're going to take a very short break, actually, because that was a hell of a tangent from just looking for a quick update in that game. And then there's a certain Manchester derby we want to talk to you about. So Pat Nevin's staying with us. Our football coverage is brought to you by Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season. We're back with Pat Nevin in just one moment.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Get more of the sports you love on Sports Extra with BT Sport and Premier Sports.
You're welcome back. So Spurs 5, Everton 0, 69 minutes in the clock. Jordan Pickford just turned to his defence and put his two fingers to his temples to say concentrate. It's a bit late for that, I think. So that's where we are with 20 minutes to go. Pat Nevin is still with us. Let's talk Manchester derby. The obvious temptation here is to get straight into Manchester United. And we had Danny Mills on the show earlier on, and that's what we did. We should just touch on Man City for a second, because it was an outrageous second half, and there was Grealish and there was Foden, and they're just all so bloody good. I would just give anything to know how Pep Guardiola does it.
Do you know, the wonderful thing, we were watching it, I was watching it with my son and my wife, we were watching it on TV, and my wife just turned around and said to me, why are they so good? just explain, why are they so good? Why are they so much better than everybody else? And I thought about it for a second, because, you know, she knows enough about sport, but I thought, well, I'm going to make this really, really simple, as obvious as I possibly can, which is, when I played you, if you played with a team, you had Peter Beardsley in it, or, you know, a really good player, a classy player in it, it would be great, because you could play around that player, and they've got about nine of them, all playing of that technical ability, you know, that who see every pass, who see every move, who have intelligence of movement, who understands the manager's tactical and technical side of it, that's absolutely fine. They are all capable of thinking out the box, but also all capable of working as a unit. They've all got exactly the right attitude. And if you have a millisecond's worth of the wrong attitude, you're on the bench, if you're lucky. You probably won't even be on the bench. And I would imagine even Pep doesn't tell them that. So you've got an option. You either do all the right things, you put all the effort in, and you continue to be, you know, have a great player with great vision. And if you don't have them all, you don't play. And how many, I don't know, teams. And it's Barca-like. That was Barca-like, you know, when great Xavi and Iniesta thing. They've not got Messi up front, but that whole thing, it looks exactly, not exactly like that, but in many, many ways like that. The willingness to go into those areas. And now and again, I'm looking for patterns. You know, we all look for patterns. And we know the favourite pattern, the absolute favourite pattern, by a million miles the favourite pattern, is to get someone to the byline, which is like old magic, like ancient. That's what gets to the byline. It's the hardest place to stop teams coming at you. So they keep on making these runs, those, you know, inside forward line runs that they make all the time. Now, all the other teams are trying a version of it. I watched Arsenal doing exactly the same thing at the weekend, like, you know, the Manchester City light kind of thing. But Man City are absolutely fantastic. The problem is, see if you sort out that way of stopping and getting the byline, you're still stuffed. Because De Bruyne will put it in the top corner, or, you know, any of them will put it in the top corner. And it's to play, talking about playing against teams, you pick out the danger man, or the danger men, maybe a couple of them. And you can't do that. You just can't do that. Because every single one of them, stop the M6 over there, and Cancelo will fly up and do something to you. And it's just ridiculous what they continue to do. And to be honest, they keep the ball so much, they keep the ball so well. There was a moment, I don't know if you remember it, in the second half, you probably will, probably jumps out of everybody's mind. Rodri made a bad pass, and the whole place went, what? Happened there? It's great. Whereas other teams make bad passes all the time, they kind of don't. And if they make a bad pass, but the wrong pass, I always look at it from above, and it's easy when you're up, you know, above it, and you're looking down, particularly at the game. And I think, no, that's what you picked the wrong pass there.
Yeah.
The right pass is that one. Pep will always see it. And Pep, it doesn't matter whether it leads to a goal or it doesn't, right? He just turns away. How can you not see that was the wrong pass? It's not massively the wrong pass. It's just that one was a wee bit better than that one that you played. And when he does it, when they do it, it's now becoming less and less and less frequent that any of them do that. And and that's why I was doing a game recently, and someone was saying to me, it's a bit boring, and I'm going, going, yeah, bore me. Just keep boring me. Honestly, I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Because when you see the technical side of it and they raise it and they lift it, and especially if someone has a go at them, that's when it's great. Because then it becomes, but when it's Manchester United to, you know, get the right flags up after a wee while, maybe I can see why that can get a little bit boring now and again because it's too easy. But remember, they're playing against decent players almost all the time. So in simple terms, you used to get one or two players that were of that ilk, that had that game awareness, but they're absolutely jam-packed all over the place. And that includes fullbacks, and that includes people breaking out for the back.
Mm. On Pep, so there's a bunch of mitigation here to what I'm about to say. There's Messi, there's the money he's generally had wherever he has gone, be that in Germany or certainly at Manchester City or Barcelona. There's his occasional wobble in the knockout stages of a Champions League game, which he's very fond of. And then there is, well, Cruyff jumps out to me. And I'm sure like there's some genius from the Hungarian team of the 30s that I'm not aware of. So I can only speak really for my lifetime. But in my lifetime, Pep got Barcelona to split centre halves, push on, play out from the back. Everybody said this is crazy. It's not going to catch on. This, you know, what are you doing? Fast forward a decade. They're doing it in League One. They're doing it all over the world. I can't think of a single individual who's had a more profound effect on the game of football worldwide.
Certainly, he's the biggest effect in England by a huge distance. People talk about Sir Alec. People talk about certainly what Wenger did. But this is different. This is the actual playing of the game, style-wise, technique-wise, adaptability-wise. I do think you can't actually mention it without mentioning Cruyff. I really don't. And then from that, Rinus Michels.
Yeah.
I think there's just a direct line, and you see it. Funnily enough, and if I am talking to the Irish nation tonight, may I pass on a message I got today, just to let you know. I was making a documentary in Scotland. I was interviewing a number of players I played with when we won the Euro 82 under-18s championships, with Paul McStay and players like that. And
can I interrupt to let the listeners know Pat Nevin was player of the tournament, by the way. Carry on.
Yeah, and we've never been able to yet find any footage of it, so I can say it was great. But as I was talking today to the chap I was interviewing in the afternoon, he said, "Oh, what are you doing?" I told him I was doing this show, and he said, "Well, say hello to everyone for me." And I went, "Oh, I will do." So Gary Mackay says hello to everyone.
Ah.
For the fact that he managed to
score. We're very fond of him. We're very fond of Gary over here.
So I was with Gary today. And funnily enough, there's a reason why that's popped into my mind, is because you're asking about, you know, Pep and the thing he's done, but having the money and all the rest of it. And I was saying to him, I do think sometimes a lot of, you could find managers in the second tier or third tier of English football, if you stuck them in the top tier with a lot of money, they would do as well as some of the other well-known managers. They'd probably just not that much dissimilar, because technique-wise, they all learn sort of the same things. There's less between them than you think.
Mm.
And then you get Pep. You go, well, no, that's different. That is just totally different, because you're an innovator. You've changed every way of looking at it. And I remember that you get Match of the Day and every Saturday night, and when he came in and he was doing that passing for the back, and I heard all of them, every one of them on that city saying, "Oh, I can't believe he's playing out. What about John Stones playing out?" And I'm screaming and throwing things at telly, going, "You gotta learn it. He's doing it. This is right. This is right." And I'm this voice in the distance shouting this. And I'm sure we talked about it in News Talk.
Yeah.
I talked about it in my other BBC program. I do Five Live. And I would just say, "No, they're wrong. He's right. They're wrong. He knows more. He's forgotten more than any of them know." And it doesn't make it any better now that I can say, "Yeah, I was right," because nobody remembers I said.
No, it's all forgotten. "It won't work in England" was one of the great refrains at the time. You can, I mean, maybe get away with it in La Liga. It won't work in England.
And I honestly throwing things at the telly every single time, shouting. And actually, nothing got me angrier, because I just felt not only is it the best way, to my mind, it's the right way as well. And it's a beautiful way to play football as well. Mm. Funnily enough, talking about him, I get really animated about it. And I still think he can be better. I still think he will be capable of improving them. Because I did worry. I thought, wait a minute, you're losing David Silva, but it's had no effect. I mean, somebody's brilliant as that, and it's had no effect. It just, you know, Bernardo Silva comes in, Gundogan does the job that he's done. You go and get Grealish. Okay, it's great having the money to do it, but you don't throw Grealish in. You show Grealish what you need to do. And then it's taken him a while because it's probably not easy to learn it all, to not be a self-indulgent player when you've got that game awareness. But how much better they made Raheem Sterling?
Yeah,
he's now going to make Grealish into the player that is integrated within that team as well. It's kind of sometimes hard to get inside footballers' minds, cause especially as they think they know it all if they've been a great player at their previous club. So, I mean, that is all brilliant. You ask about all those players. I was talking, so I was, another thing I was doing last week, I made that a show for Radio 4. You know, I had my posh voice on that one, right? And they asked me if there was any, there's a programme called Great Lives here. And it's a big old thing in the, you know, the BBC's history. And they said to me, who would you put as a great life? And it has to be somebody who's dead. And I said, yeah, there's two people. And neither of them have been done. And what my football and great life would be Cruyff. I think he's the one. I think he's the one that's done more than anyone else. Because what has happened after, you can almost always trace it back to him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's had a profound effect for sure. Manchester United. Nothing profound about what they're doing just right now. So clock is coming against us a touch. I'm just going to mention about three or four or five things I was going to ask you about and knit them together, and then you can give us your thoughts on where they are. So Marcus Rashford considering his future has come out this afternoon. Just two starts in their last 11 Premier League games. The Guardian had a piece, well-sourced, and I saw Miguel Delaney tweet that there is disquiet at the club about the timing of these Rashford leaks, as was put to him, do it after you score a hat-trick. So disquiet on the Rashford front. The Ronaldo rumours, the sense is he was training fine, he was good. He was told he wouldn't be starting by Rangnick, who wanted fresh legs. And he said Ronaldo could make an impact off the bench. Ronaldo felt he should start. And so Sun Sport, for instance, Neil Custis, understands his teammates were surprised he didn't stay at the team hotel on Saturday night. It seems he flew home to Portugal and had no interest in making an impact from the bench. And then there are the constant rumours that there is a tug-of-war, the captaincy between Ronaldo and Harry Maguire. How true they are, I don't know, but they're certainly not going away. And then there is, I don't know, Rangnick's idea of, well, it looked 4-2-2-2-ish again. McTominay, Fred, Elanga, Sancho, Bruno Fernandes, Pogba. And obviously the backside fell out of the whole thing as the second half went on. To be fair, it didn't improve when Rashford came on and they went to a more conventional 4-2-3-1. So maybe it's harsh to beget the formation. But the general sense is this is just a club in absolute crisis now. This is the first tough match they've had under Rangnick. And we flagged that this was coming, this period. And they were obliterated.
That looks like a stinker of a dressing room. It really does. It doesn't look like a bunch of people working together. And it hasn't done for a long, long time. In a way, you look back at Solskjaer and say, well done, mate, to keep as much of it together as you did. It's been my complaint for a long time. The mistakes of... Ronaldo's a brilliant player, but he can't play in a certain way. So, you know, you buy him in, you take the hit of... either you don't play him, you're going to have trouble, right? Because he expects to play all the time. If you play them, you can't play the way you want to play, right? So that's it, full stop. That's one whole methodology out of the window now. You can't do it. And then you start looking at what your big names. And I don't want to be the broken record about Pogba, but he had one of his kind of prancing days. Yeah, it's a way he kind of runs this kind of prancy way when he's not trying. It's really funny. It's really interesting to see. You watch the ball goes by him and he makes a lunge and then it's the prancy back. And it's not run. It's not running. It's not hurting himself. Now, I noticed on the TV the other day, they really pointed out Rashford got beat and then just didn't really bother chasing back. It wasn't just him. It wasn't just Pogba. There was just too many. And I think it's one of those things, being in teams where you've got four or five that are pushing and throwing themselves about and closing down, and one and maybe two doesn't, and everybody else just thinks, I'm looking bad now because I'm chasing shadows and I look stupid because they're passing it around me. Well, he's not trying and it's his fault. He might be 40 yards away, but it's him.
Yeah.
And I know that. See, as soon as you start getting two or three, four or five players in the team doing that, you've not got a team anymore.
Yeah.
You just got
two. I felt that came across in McTominay's post-match interview where he was asked about effort and he said he'd have to watch it back and have a look at body language. So that suggests instinctively I didn't feel everybody was with me out there, because he does seem like an honest broker out there. But I totally take your point. He can look very foolish if the guy 40 yards away isn't doing his job.
Well, somebody said that when I did an analysis, what bad analysis I was watching, and he was 1-2'd and the ball went by, and they said, "Oh, look, they've
yeah,
got
Roy,
by."
Roy Keane said it, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, yeah, where's the covering guy that when you go, he backs you? Look, I was a winger most of my career. I know how to do that.
Yeah, but you know what, Roy is turning this far for me. I take your point on the dressing room and the DNA and the moral fibre. But like that only explains this so far. I think that was not a satisfactory explanation on McTominay. He was just like, look at McTominay. There wasn't enough depth to that analysis.
I would say in that group, I would put my first pick in the team.
So, yeah.
I would absolutely put my first pick. Right, okay, who's next? But I've got him in there because I need that. Because if I've not got him in there and I've not got work rate and I've not got somebody who's got the attitude and the feeling of the team, but I'm a mess. You have no chance whatsoever. And I know Roy's a very much a specialist in that position. Of course he is a specialist in that position. But, you know, I've watched McTominay. I'm not saying he's the best player in the world, but I would have him every single time. And I suspect if you take him out of that team, that just falls apart. That just looks like a complete and utter shambles without him. So, because we have all done it before. We've all been there before. And it's a funny thing. There's a glance on a field, you look at a player and you go, I know you did that to me. And they know that you know. And it's not that obvious, but it's a kind of, it's almost an organic thing in a field. You know what's pulling you one way and what's pulling you the other way. And I'm sure I explained this before, like if I was playing, I was, let's say a left wing, right, and it was a 4-4-2 and I was defending all the time, the problem was our right winger, the guy who was 70 yards away. That's the problem, because he won't come back, so I need to spin around, right? And everyone's going, oh, he's knocking up the park, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's his fault over there, but he's trying to explain that to people because I'll work, he should be working and we can both do it. And it's like that, particularly in a midfield. If you've not got everyone doing it and you're the one that's running about, it's quite often you're the one that looks stupid.
Yeah, you can catch the eye almost. Trying. Yeah. So, I mean, it does look like fourth place is gone. Arsenal, a point clear, 3 games in hand. Let's modestly say Arsenal will get 5 points from 9. So suddenly they're 6 points clear of Manchester United. I'm not sure United are getting that back. So it's just an utterly disastrous season. There's no sign of this thing sorting itself out. I don't know. Like, what more can you say about this whole mess?
I suppose the one thing you can say is a lot will go in the summer. And if you get a chance to absolutely rebuild, I'm pretty convinced now, and I think most Man United fans are convinced now, there is nowhere close to a squad there that's going to be competitive with Liverpool, Manchester City anytime soon. So you basically need a cull. And culls are hard, particularly if you're Manchester United, because those, every one of them will be on a lot more than deserve, and they won't get it elsewhere. So you either need the contract run out, which is a disaster because you don't get anything back for your investment, or you need to almost pay some of the wages for the next club they go into. But you've got to deal with that now, because that's one bullet you've got to bite now if you're Manchester United, because you would do anything to get a group of players, even just that steady, solid midfield, and think, right, okay, really get in there, get that really heavily sorted out, and if you need to pay over the odds for somebody who can do that within their league, Bentancur is a great buy for Spurs. If you'd have stuck him in there alongside McTominay, you think, well, that's all right, it steadied it a little bit, and then you can build from that. But by the end of the season, you've got to think 4, 5, 6, 7 leave. And then you've got a chance to rebuild. But it feels like end of season now, doesn't it? It feels to me like I wouldn't be putting a penny on them getting into the Champions League, which is scary, really. I mean, they're capable of it. Everyone can go. Newcastle United have just gone on a phenomenal run. It's not beyond them. It just doesn't look like it.
No, it feels like they've all checked out. And they play Spurs on Saturday, by the way, which will be something I suspect we might talk about next Monday. The clock has totally come against us with everything. So can we put a pin in the Thomas Tuchel, Chelsea fans and the Abramovich conversation and do that properly next week? Because I'd really like your thoughts on where all that's going. And we might know more next week, to be fair, as well. So we might say good evening for the time being. Pat, you can enjoy the last 3 minutes of Everton against Spurs.
Yeah, I think I might enjoy something else.
Good man. Thanks a million. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Pat Nevin with us there. We'll chat to Pat next Monday. We'll come back to the Chelsea situation and then United Spurs. I think it's on Saturday. I think it's the 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Just double check that, but I think that's when that's on. And our football show coverage is brought to you by Sky. Watch every UEFA Champions League and Europa League match live on BT Sport this season. They are into the final minute at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. 5-0 Spurs.
Football on off the ball.
With Sky. Get more of the sports you love on Sports Extra with BT Sport and Premier Sports.
Oh, you're welcome, Max. So as we sign off for the football show, Team OTB has assembled for the final word. We have Ronan, Arthur, we have Mick in studio. Arthur, you were just saying Frank Lampard was a preposterous appointment.
Yeah, I was looking that way. I mean, it's just... It is hilariously bad how poor they've been here. Like, it's just, this is ramshackle.
Ramshackle. Well, Pan Evan was saying he started watching this game and he noticed they had gone with a 4-1 type thing and realised it was not working and they really needed to switch to 4-2-3-1. And he was saying this very early on. And Frank got there in about the 50-something minute.
Like, it's just... Look, he's probably just... Maybe he's just not good enough. Do you know that kind of... Like, it's just... And it, maybe, again, it's kind of the... You made the point about Derby doing a decent job there, and that's fine. But like, it's hard to cast aspersions over someone's entire capabilities on being thrown into this role. But this clearly was a mistake, hiring him.
Yeah.
It's not. This isn't going to end well.
But genuinely relegation contenders now, because their April is a nightmare.
They are, yeah, without a doubt. Like, because there's like you feel like Leeds are going to come into a little bit of form. Brentford could easily stretch away there, just have one or two results, and. Burnley, like, who would you take in a head-to-head now between Sean Dyche's Burnley and Frank Lampard's Everton?
I feel like you're leading the witness.
Yeah.
But, you know, like,
yeah.
Look at the squad, though, as well. Like, we can blame Lampard all day long. This is a squad of mediocre talent who failed elsewhere.
Yeah.
It really is.
There is that. I mean, this is very serious now. You surely can't make a change, can you?
Sack him again, like get rid of him.
Well, I mean, if the backside falls out of this, I keep using that expression.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the expression I'd use off air, but you know, surely you can't. But equally, you can't watch.
Do you think he has
relegation
like,
happen?
What's the thing
motion?
You have? Like when you enter a new job, probation. Because yeah. I just get the job. It's just not working, Frank.
Yeah, we should, on a happier note, signal the real return of Matt Doherty, Ronan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was making the point that. Emerson Royale hasn't blown my socks off any time I've seen him, and I was quite surprised that Antonio Conte went with him for a somewhat sustained period because yeah. Doherty playing very good stuff for Ireland, bizarrely never given a chance under Nuno. I didn't understand that at all.
I would have thought when Nuno arrived it would have been match made in heaven.
Especially Højbjerg, I think it was, during pre-season, was putting up Instagrams of teacher's pet.
Big hug there between Conte and Matt Doherty.
Love it.
I don't want to read too much into it, but big hug.
I'm no body language expert, but that's a good sign.
Two assists for Harry Kane. I mean, he looks fit again. He looks strong again. And he is lucky that another manager fresh on the heels of Nuno, who likes five at the back, arrived. I mean, it's worked out quite well for him.
Oh, definitely. And like Nuno, he played him in European games. And like, it was this weird thing. I dreaded going on Twitter nearly after Spurs European games because Doherty was going down as nearly one of the least popular Spurs players of all time. He couldn't do anything right.
But he really wasn't good. Like,
he wasn't playing well and he was being blamed for everything at the same time. So he just needed a run like this in the team where a manager believed in him, played to his system, and it's been brilliant. He was class against Leeds. He got like that first goal against Leeds and you just felt like even him sprinting from the halfway line into the box centrally to finish that was like, he believes in himself again. You almost felt like he wouldn't have done that a couple of months ago. So to see a performance like tonight on TV when Spurs are at their absolute best under Conte and he's at the centre of its class.
Well, not only do Manchester United have Arsenal to contend with now for a fourth spot, if Spurs win their two games in hand, they go 4 points ahead of Manchester United, same number of games played for fourth spot. So between Spurs or Arsenal, you would think the odds of Manchester United having Champions League football is next to zero, unless, of course, they win the Champions League.
Mm. Like, their chief concern shouldn't be not getting Champions League, it should be getting Europa Conference League, which won't
West Ham versus United for
wouldn't,
that. Yeah.
Wouldn't be a very glamorous outing for United away fans next season.
Even Pat Nevin, who does usually like really great technical and tactical analysis, and did it tonight, like explained why McTominay rushes out and looks a bit silly and certain moments like that. Even he, though, said there is something rotten about this dressing room. They must be the least popular dressing room in world football.
I was just saying that to Rowan earlier. I wonder what it's like going into work. You know, for one of the lower level people in that squad. Like,
I wouldn't say a word in case someone leaks it.
Oh my God.
I wouldn't say a word to you about what I thought in case it was in the papers the next day.
I wonder, did they say it to each other the next day, like, that thing I said about Maguire last week, you weren't supposed to leak that.
Well, that was terrible. Like, everyone's like, oh, what's happened to Harry Maguire? He's, you know, his form's on the floor. Literally in the papers. His teammates are saying his footballing ability is not good enough to be Manchester United material. And he's having to, like, walk out in a tunnel with these guys. Yeah. And he knows a few of them have thrown him under the bus.
And nobody in that dressing room has the platform to demean anyone else's footballing ability at the moment. So I wonder... Like, it's easy to say it's the disgruntled players in the squad, but they all seem quite disgruntled at the moment.
Yeah.
Start again. Rip it all up.
£1 billion required.
Yeah, absolutely.
We go again.
To what extent is that true, though? Like, is there enough talent there where a competent manager and a few good additions would actually turn the ship around, or is it actually wholesale?
That's a good question. I think a right back, a centre midfielder, and a striker.
A left back, two centre halves, a forward, and...
I feel like you might get Shaw back, you know? And I feel like Maguire could be nursed back to competency. He was like in the Euros 2020 team of the competition.
I was thinking that during the game yesterday. Is like, Harry Maguire was always overrated, but he was never this bad.
No. So I honestly feel Wan-Bissaka is probably not going to work out. Right back, centre midfielder with Scott McTominay. I'll put that on the record. Pogba goodbye and a striker. And obviously Ronaldo gone. I think that could be, with a right manager, not disastrous.
And the slate might wipe itself clean for the new manager. There mightn't be as much of an onus as there has been in previous appointments where, to your point, Pogba will go, Lingard will go, Rashford will go. So I think Rashford will go now. There was a point where I thought any rebuild, he'd be a fundamental part of it. Now I think he's the first one that probably has to go.
Well, it seems he's not happy. Fellas, we're out of time. That's our Team OTB recap of the football show this evening. So we're back tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Brian O'Driscoll in studio, amongst other things. OTB AM tomorrow morning, 7:30, live on all our social channels. Tom Dunn on the way.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Get more of the sports you love on Sports Extra with BT Sport and Premier Sports.